Radio 3 Symphony. From Mozart and Haydn to Stravinsky and Shostakovich. To complement the new BBC 4 series, BBC Radio 3 presents a month of performances, programmes and downloads exploring a giant musical genre and how it was shaped by the world around it. You can hear complete performances of every symphony featured in the BBC 4 series in Radio 3's Afternoon on 3. Weekday afternoons starting this Friday on BBC Radio 3 from 2 o'clock.
And now, Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Trevor Phillips is chair of the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and before that, he chaired the organisation which was known as the Commission for Racial Equality. Trevor studied chemistry at Imperial College and was president of the National Union of Students. He then went into broadcasting and became head of current affairs at London Weekend Television in 1992. With his brother, Mike Phillips, he wrote Windrush, The Irresistible Rise of Multiracial Britain. I noticed that he was on the board of Aubra Productions, and then, Trevor, we met at the Proms, so I guessed that there was some interest in music.
Oh, I've always been interested in music. Let's be honest, not very good at it, but completely captivated and awed by people, first of all, who can compose it, but in a funny way, even more by people who can interpret it. I'm completely dumbstruck at the way that someone can take the notes on a page and turn them into a language which needs no translator. And maybe one of the reasons I'm taken by that is because I've lived from baby in different countries and in very different cultures. And I guess I'm always interested in the ways that you can communicate across the lines of culture, of difference, of religion, race and so on. And music is a fantastic way to do that.
Did you play an instrument at all?
Oh, this is embarrassing, isn't it? Yes, I played I played the euphonium in the Salvation Army band. In fact, I started the French horn, but I preferred the euphonium, richer sound and all of that. I played the piano a little bit, failed with violin, and then stopped for a long, long time. Every now and again, I try to pick up the trumpet. I have my eyes on learning to play the harmonica because it feels easy. But I spent a lifetime trying to learn how to play an instrument.
Well, even that experience must be quite useful in making you admire those that do it fantastically well, even more than you might do. I mean, for example, our first soloist.
Well, there are instruments which I suppose are not physically hard to play, but you have to be really good to shine. But I think there are some instruments which are in themselves just hard to play, and I think the trumpet is one of those. And the thing with some of the great trumpeters is there's a line that they cross into facility which just seems magical. And Wynton Marsalis, in my view, of all of the trumpeters I have heard, is probably the one who is furthest in that zone. I saw him playing not very long ago here in London. And what is extraordinary is, you know, people talk about someone making the instrument speak. And literally, he is, without any apparent effort, capable of, never mind range and speed and virtuosity and all of that, he just has mastered a capacity to communicate through the instrument, which it's just extraordinary. And I can't quite even imagine how he does it. That's the problem. But the guy's a kind of genius, you know. He won his first two Grammys, never done before, Jazz Grammy and a Classical Grammy in, I think, 1983, and did the same thing again the following year. I mean, that says something about, yes, virtuosity, which is astonishing.
And also, I mean, as with great tennis players or cricketers, there's something about when you master a technique which makes everything look simple thereafter.
Well, you know, when he did the Grammys, I was then still a television producer. I was working at London Weekend Television. And we produced a show where he came and he talked about his music and so on. And I always remember a really important thing that he said, which was, I think, quite extraordinary for somebody who's his age. His great hero was Louis Armstrong. And he said, you know, the thing about Louis Armstrong, and he said it to me, and I think this is probably, in a sense, a kind of a thing that a black person, one black person could say to another. He said, you know, the thing about Louis Armstrong, everybody says great rhythm, great natural talent, and so on. He then said the equivalent of that's just rubbish. The guy had great technique. He worked hard. He understood his instrument. This wasn't just some gift from God. This was hard work, and it was superlative technique. And that's why he sounds like he's not making any effort. And I have to say, that's always stayed with me, because Marsalis shows it in his own work. And as you say, with the great tennis player, the great musicians, I can't imagine that there are many people, you know, like the sort of Amadeus legends of Mozart, the idea that actually just all that happens is you're born with this thing and it pours out of you. Actually, I think for most people who look as if they're doing things effortlessly, it is because of many, many hours, many, many years of thought, practice, consideration of how best you do things, and somehow you get to a place where you go through a barrier in which your reflexes are so beautifully honed that you no longer have to worry about, for example, producing the sound. What you worry about, or what you think about, is what do I want to say with this sound? And that to me is the state of the great artist.
Thank you.
We heard Wynton Marsalis playing the first movement from the Trumpet Concerto in E-flat major by Haydn with the National Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Raymond Leppard. Trevor Phillips, I think this next piece, the voice reminds you very much of a certain English style. Mm.
Yeah, I think most people would say that Janet Baker represents a period and a time and a kind of England which has gone by. I don't actually agree with that. There's a sense that we think of Janet Baker as almost Edwardian. I think that's wrong for a whole series of reasons. Number one reason, coming back to this point about technique, just superlative. I mean, I'm not a singer, but you can't fault her capability. And in the piece you're going to hear, she does some things which I think are just really striking and would be very difficult for most singers, but she carries it off with an elan and an ease and the doubling of the horn and all of that, which is really kind of hard to imagine somebody doing who's not at the top of their game, completely in control of their instrument and so on. The other thing about her is that there's always a sort of sense when people talk about somebody like Janet Baker
or Kathleen Ferrier.
So that actually what we're also talking about is a little bit an English obsession, which is class. That actually only sort of middle-class people can listen to this and understand it and care about. Well, actually, I mean, Baker herself, working-class Yorkshire.
Ferrier certainly was.
Working-class Yorkshire girl. And for most people, who come from poor backgrounds, I mean, you know, I came from a North London immigrant family, we lived in Rackham slums and so on. My introduction to any serious music was through listening or hearing my father playing basically sacred music, Stainless Crucifixion, Handel, all of that at home and a little bit at school and then the Salvation Army. Now, these might be not the middle class route, but they were roots to real serious music. Great art is great in part because it is accessible and meaningful to anybody, whatever their background. And when you listen to Janet Baker, it doesn't matter who you are, you know, this voice is amazing in almost every way. Thank you.
I'm rather astonished Trevor Phillips that the horn player doesn't get credited there, because it's really a starring role, isn't it?
It's astonishing, and the two of them are, you know, completely intertwined, clear, fantastic understanding and so on. But, you know, this is a sort of great example, I think, of English music, because, you know, Handel, okay, he's called Handel, but he's, to all intents and purposes, really an English composer. But the performers, Baker, James Bowman is in the recitative before this. There's Baker, James Bowman, and John Tomlinson, you know, the kind of cream of English singers. And just listening to it, one of the things that I really like, and probably says something about my own character, with, I suppose, which I'm not normally associated with, is that I love in both Baker's performance and the horn a sort of sense of restraint. Another singer, another conductor, I suppose, Macarius, could have made this sort of rather showy, there's, you know, enough decoration for people to kind of show up. But there's none of that here. It's very steady, but I think more intense for that.
Less is more.
Less is more.
How silently, how slyly, from Julius Caesar, Act One by Handel, Dame Janet Baker singing Caesar, with the orchestra of the English National Opera conducted by Sir Charles Mackerras, and presumably it was the first horn playing those, well, it's duetting, really, wasn't it?
It was a duet, yeah. But lovely, lovely in every way.
You were talking about, in a way, appreciating that understatement, and I think one of the things that you felt quite strongly over the years doing your job and talking to politicians is that at one point we stressed multiculturalism too much, which could enough stop the assimilation and the sharing of all of these things as being British.
Well, I think that there was a tendency, and this was politics really, to emphasise the things that people do not have in common. Now, this came out of a perfectly reasonable desire, I think, in the 1970s, perhaps, to make sure that we recognised that, you know, we aren't all the same, people bring different heritages and so on.
But celebrate individuality.
To celebrate our backgrounds. And I think this has always actually been part of the English heritage, going back to the first Elizabeth, who, you know, she said, when essentially invited to do in as many Catholics as possible, she said, I will not make a window into men's secret hearts and thoughts, except insofar as they overspill into acts of disloyalty. And I think that's part of the great English tradition of integration. And it's one of the reasons why this country, you know, we have things up and down from time to time, but by and large, we do not have the sort of ghastly ethnic strife that disfigures, in fact, most of the world. My family comes from a country which was British Guiana, now is Guyana, which is the second poorest in the Western Hemisphere. And there is only one reason why that is the case. We are a country of very few people, less than a million, but there are six different ethnic groups, and all politics, all business, all residence and property and so on is racially divided. So this is a nation which finds it very, very, very difficult to get out of a 40, 50-year-old hole, because everybody essentially is constantly fighting. Now, this country, I think, has dealt with that incredibly well. And at the heart of it is the idea that, first of all, we are quite restrained, we're polite, we give other people enough space to express themselves, to the point where actually they can have an identity or a series of identities, but not to the extent where they have to live by a different set of rules. And I think the problem for some of what happened towards the back end of the 20th century and a little this century was that government and a lot of public institutions had overbalanced. They were so keen on recognising diversity that they forgot that a more important thing to do is to remind ourselves that we are one people. One of the points about this kind of music is that the consequence of that difference was that essentially, you know, there are groups of people being told, oh yeah, you won't be interested in this kind of thing because actually, you know, your history is African or your history is Indian. Why don't you go and listen to some Indian or African music? So tens of thousands of school children were essentially being told, oh, you know, you don't need to be bothered about Mozart or Britain or whatever it is. Why don't you go and listen to some blues or some reggae? Now, this is a kind of cultural starvation, which is exactly the opposite of a properly well-integrated society that values culture. Anyway, sorry, I am quite passionate about it because I think coming from the background that I do, I think if I'd had the misfortune to be told, actually, you've got to live within the bounds of your culture, I would never have had the life I live now. I'm lucky enough now to be able to inhabit, frankly, more than one historic culture. And that surely has to be the aim for everybody.
A traditional song now, Trevor. Mm.
I didn't really come to this in any particularly natural way. I'm not, you know, I wasn't a folkie at college or anything. But I was introduced to this by my executive assistant, Nicola Barker, who is a singer, studied music, and actually knows stuff. And she knows that I'm keen on Vaughan Williams, for example. And she said to me, listen to this, because actually this is part of that tradition. And actually when you listen to it, to me it has two great qualities. One, it is right in the line of that, you know, the English Folk Song Society, and you can hear that being breathed. But the other thing that's in it is there's a sort of connection right across the world of folk music, of laments, lullabies, and so on and so forth, which you could probably tell me, but the musicology of this, I don't understand that. But I can feel that there's a connection between this, bluegrass music, some kind of African folk music, and some of the folk music that we have in the Caribbean. And I just was completely taken by it.
I think the underlying point is actually it's an oral tradition.
Well, there
it's
you
been, go. Been passed on by ear.
Well, I've learnt something already.
Because he was a bonny lad, she bid him aye come back again. She bid him once and she bid him twice, she bid him kiss and come again. Because he was a bonny lad, she bid him aye come back again. She bid him once and she bid him twice, she bid him kiss and come again. Da 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 ba dum 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 ba da da bum.
Bye.
That was the Onthanks recording, Rachel and Becky Onthanks, of Because He Was a Bonnie Lad, a traditional tune. And of course, the fascinating thing, Trevor Phillips, is we are moving on to Vaughan Williams, who derived a huge amount of his inspiration entirely from that kind of tradition. In fact, he went round notating the tunes, much as Bartok did in Hungary.
Well, what's wonderful about Vaughan Williams, and indeed everybody who was part of that tradition, Granger and so on, is that there's something immensely democratic about what they did, which is not to say they aren't masters, extraordinarily capable, technical, had their own inspiration and so on. But I think there's something special about the capacity of a musician to draw from people's memories and traditions, because, again, it is expressive and has literally a resonance with who we are. And, you know, just sitting thinking, listening to this and thinking about it, you know, the Onthanks are, they're a band from the Northeast. I have no connection, really, with the Northeast. But just listening to those minutes of music, I immediately sort of think I have a feel for what they're about, and, you know, there's a series of songs that they will sing about people going away to sea and so on. And immediately you have an idea of what these people are like. And in the life that I live, the job that I do, the writing that I do, the task of trying to understand what is different between people and what is similar about them is sort of helped by this kind of understanding. So when you come to, you know, Vaughan Williams and Thomas Tallis, there's not a story for one to tell here, but there is something about the tone, the manner and so on, which is actually ineffably English and says something about the country and the traditions out of which Vaughan Williams wrote. But the way that he translates this makes that tradition accessible to everybody. I mean, this is music that is not exclusive, that doesn't say you can't be part of this because you don't go back 70 generations. It says this is who we are. And if you can understand this, respond to it, then actually you're already part of who we are.
We heard the last 6 minutes of the Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis by Vaughan Williams. The solo strings were played by Iona Brown, Trevor Connor, violins, Stephen Shingles, viola, and Kenneth Heath, cello. The Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, directed by Neville Mariner. You mentioned playing in the Salvation Army, and we're going to hear something now to remind you of that.
Yes, you're going to hear people who can really play. I mean, the thing about the International Staff Band of the Salvation Army, which is, I guess, about 100 years old now, is that though I think, you know, the historical image of the Salvation Army is, you know, Major Barbara, tin cans, people out on the street, one of the things, besides the fact that the Army itself is a terrific organisation, incredibly professional, committed, and so on, one of the things that I learned is that the musical traditions in the Army are astonishing. I mean, this recording was made for the 75th anniversary of the band, and it was given to me as a 12-year-old because I had been playing in the junior band at the Citadel, where I went, in Wood Green in North London. And Wood Green's band was the best. It was the best in the country, probably the best Salvation Army band there was, and therefore a number of the people who played in that band were also in the International Staff Band. But the point about this piece, more than anything else, is that it is fantastically jolly, it is vital, and the ability you can just hear coming through. I, by the way, have not heard this on vinyl for 25 years, so this is going to be a treat. Thank you.
We heard Bearcroft's Joyous Carillon. Carillon as in French, rather than Carillon up the Khyber.
Yeah, not entirely appropriate for a Salvation Army band.
The international staff band of the Salvation Army, conducted by Colonel Bernard Adams. Well, I'm really thrilled, Trevor Phillips, that you've got some music, traditional music, now from where you came from.
Yeah, I was born in London, but I went back, like a lot of kids. You know, my family lived in a Finsbury Park tenement, probably rented to them by Rackman, who, you know, we all remember and loathe. And there were three families in one tenement. I was the seventh of seven children, a bit too many, so they sent me back to what was then British Guiana. I spent a few years here, 4 or 5 years at school in the middle of my childhood, but most of my childhood, basically, I was I suppose what you would today call a no-parent child. I lived with my aunt and my grandmother until I was 17 when I came to university. So I sort of grew up with the sounds of Guyana and of village life more than anything else. We lived in a village called Kitty, which is on the Atlantic coast. And in the street where we lived, there was a market. And every Friday and Saturday, the women would come down from the country and they'd fill the whole street with, you know, stuff on the ground, and people go out and buy their fish and so on and so forth. And I grew up in and out of trenches, in and out of the sea and so on. It was what we would now think of as a pretty basic childhood. I didn't actually see an inside toilet till I was 7 years old. But, you know, there's something about village life which is incredibly seductive, and at this end of life, all you remember is the fun of it. And this particular piece is a very traditional Guyanese folk song, and what it is, so I should explain because it might be a bit difficult to understand, is a conversation between man and the wife of his neighbour. And his neighbour is what in Guyana we call a pork knocker, who is basically a miner. And the miners go up into the Amazon forest. Guyana is about 85% virgin forest. And what they do is they mine rivers and forest for diamonds and for gold. And the pork knockers, will disappear for weeks and weeks and weeks. Then they come back, and they will come back with a bag of gold nuggets or diamonds. And the legend of pork knockers is that what they do is they come back, they get massively drunk, they spend everything, and then they end up after 2 weeks with nothing, and then they're back off into the forest. And that's the whole... But the pork knocker is a kind of quintessentially Guyanese character. And this song is really about what happens when the pork knockers spent all his money and his wife hasn't got any money, and she's finally saying good morning to her neighbour. And the neighbour, in a true Guyanese style, because we're very direct, we don't like hypocrisy, says, don't bother with your conniving good morning, because you didn't talk to me when you had money.
Because your money done, you hustle for tell me money.
Yes, money
never, money money, never, money, money money. I don't want you conniving money. Neighbor, neighbor, joker, neighbor, neighbor, joker.
That's all the money that me walk, walk. A 2 pound note and a guilder piece. A 2 pound note and a guilder piece. A 2 pound note and a guilder piece. That's all the money that me walk, walk.
Money never, money, money never, money. Money, I don't want you can I be money.
One bunch green planting, one string quackquarry, one jill black pepper, all you can buy with a guild of
bees. Yes, money never,
money never, money,
money never, money
money never, I don't want you can have in money. When you been a corrupt home, and I been tell me money. No, because
you money done, you come with the knife in money.
You had your pocket full, and I been tell me money. Now because your money done, you hustle for tell me money.
Money never,
money money never, money money
never,
money. I don't want you can live in money.
Money
never, money money never, money money. You can live in money.
We heard traditional Ghana folk song, Mornin' Neighbour. We're going to let our hair down a little bit to finish, aren't we, Trevor Phillips?
Yeah, Tom Lehrer. Fantastically funny, but also I started life as a chemist. I came back from Guyana at 17, far too young, actually, and I was let loose on London to do chemistry at Imperial College. And I realised within 3 weeks that I was never going to be a chemist. One of the reasons, aside from the fact of, you know, not having talent, was that I was in a department which had 3 Nobel Prize winners in it. give them their due, they all lectured to first-year students, which was fantastic. You know, you were there with these giants, Jeff Wilkinson, Derek Barton, and so on, who names of chemists will know. And that was fantastic if you were a great chemist. If you were a mediocre or less than mediocre chemist, you were just sitting there baffled by what they were saying. And I think I realised quite soon that I was not going to be that. I mean, I got to the end of my degree, but I knew I was never going to go down that road. And this Tom Lehrer piece kind of perhaps is how I felt on some lecture days.
Now, if I may digress momentarily from the mainstream of this evening's symposium, I'd like to sing a song which is completely pointless, but is something which I picked up during my career as a scientist. This may prove useful to some of you someday, perhaps in a somewhat bizarre set of circumstances. It's simply the names of the chemical elements set to a possibly recognizable tune. There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. Isn't that interesting? I knew you would. I hope you're all taking notes, because there's going to be a short quiz next period. There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury, molybdenum and magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, krypton, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
The one and only Tom Lehrer.
Hilarious.
With the elements. And you got euphonium in a couple of times there.
It's just so funny. And you think, what is that in that guy's head that he came up with that and then executed it so brilliantly? I've heard it dozens of times and it is still funny. It's still funny. It's just great.
Trevor Phillips, thank you so much for your choice of music today.
Thank you very much. Been a great pleasure.
Trevor Phillips was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the sitar player and composer Anushka Shankar. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3. The producer of this week's edition was Sarah Cropper.
Leonardo, artist, engineer, showman.
If the painter wishes to see monstrous things, he can be lord and creator thereof. If he wishes to depict creatures or devils in hell, he only has to unlock his imagination.
BBC Radio 3's Sunday feature uncovers a lesser-known aspect of Leonardo da Vinci, his pageants and parades.
You have somebody who I believe had what I call a four-dimensional mind. He could visualise the time sequence of the event itself that the audience are watching, but also the process.
With excerpts from Leonardo's notebooks and vivid eyewitness accounts, Leonardo's biographer Charles Nicol explores yet another amazing aspect of this Renaissance man. This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature, starting at 7:45.
Hello, I'm John Shea with you this Sunday afternoon on BBC Radio 3. It's coming up to 1 o'clock, so I do hope you remember to put your clocks back 1 hour last night. In a couple of minutes, after the news, we're off to Poland with Telemann. He visited the country in 1706, and the music that he heard there had a great influence on his own compositions, as you can hear in a concert from this year's Lufthansa Festival in a couple of minutes. And then we've music by Benjamin Britten and Richard Strauss from the BBC National Orchestra of Wales in an hour's time. That's our Sunday concert at 2. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock now. Time for the news from David Cornett.
The Foreign Office has repeated its call for President Assad of Syria to step down after he warned of an earthquake if the West intervened in his country. In an interview with the Sunday Telegraph, President Assad said Western intervention could turn Syria into another Afghanistan. More than 3,000 people have died in protests in Syria since March. Yesterday alone, it was reported that up to 50 protesters and members of the security forces had been killed. The Foreign Office said President Assad was resorting to brutal military force. The Bishop of London, Richard Charters, has addressed the anti-capitalism movement outside St Paul's Cathedral, saying he doesn't want the protest to end in violence. When questioned by a protester, Dr Charters declined to say whether he would support an eviction, but in the past he has said he wants the demonstration to move on. At least 200 tents are on the land outside St Paul's. The Prime Minister has announced that ships sailing under a British flag will be able to carry armed guards to protect them from pirates. Mr Cameron said it was a complete insult that Somali pirates were holding the world to ransom. It's thought the policy could apply to up to 200 ships in the Merchant Navy, which regularly sail past the Horn of Africa. Some countries have laws against armed guards passing through their waters. Egypt recently banned them from the Suez Canal. Emergency talks are underway in Australia to try to get Qantas planes back in the air. The airline grounded all domestic and international flights yesterday, including routes to and from London, as part of a long-running row with staff. Qantas said all flights will be grounded until at least the early hours of tomorrow. The government is planning to cut the council tax discount for people with second homes. Second homes currently receive up to 50% off the tax. The Community Secretary, Eric Pickles, will give more details tomorrow. And the weather, it'll be a dry, cloudy afternoon for most of the UK, but with some showers in southern England and heavier rain in northern Scotland. Temperatures will be mild for the time of year. There'll be more rain in western parts of the UK this evening. BBC News and Weather at 2 minutes past one.
David Cornett, thank you very much. So now on Radio 3, it's time for today's early music show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. We're hearing the opening piece of a concert given at St John's Smith Square in London, part of the 2011 Lufthansa Festival. The performers are the Montreal-based Ensemble Caprice, and their programme focused on the music of Georg Philipp Telemann, the German Baroque composer who was an almost exact contemporary of Bach and Handel. When he was in his mid-20s, Telemann went to work for Reichsgraf Erdmann II in what's now Żary in western Poland. In those days, as in so much of Europe, the cultural tastes of the rich and noble tended to ape those of Louis XIV's France. So, even in this great castle not far from the German border, the young composer was inevitably exposed to an awful lot of Lully-type French music. He would, though, have been familiar with local styles as well, especially when, in response to what historians called the Great Northern War, the entire court was forced to flee south for a few months. Now, in the countryside around Krakow and Pless, Telemann fell in love with the traditional Polish and Moravian melodies he heard, gypsy music which would have a profound impact on him. What wonderful imaginative ideas these pipers and fiddlers have as they improvise, he wrote. In only a week, a composer would be inspired for an entire lifetime. Indeed he was, and it's this link between traditional gypsy music and Telemann's own compositions that was the inspiration for this concert, which was led and part introduced from the stage by the group's effervescent recorder player, Matthias Mauter. Gypsy music from the Uchrowska collection, performed there by Ensemble Caprice, led by recorder player Matthias Mauter, part of their concert given at St John's Smith Square. Music like that, that Telemann heard in the Polish countryside, had its origins amongst the Romani Sinti, a nomadic people whose roots probably lay in the Indian subcontinent. It would have been improvised and passed on down the generations through the oral tradition. So we're very fortunate that in 1730, a scholar put together 350 of these gypsy melodies in a large volume, the Uchrowska collection, It's a fantastic treasure trove of Eastern European folk music, representing Hungarian, Polish, Slovakian and many other geographically indefinable influences. Only tunes are printed, since it was assumed any accompaniment or arrangement would be improvised. And indeed, Matthias Mauter and his group have done just that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Roma and Sinti took off a long journey around the year 1000 AD from India all the way to Europe. It's been a long trip. They arrived at around the 15th century in Paris. It took up until the 21st century to reach finally London. Telemann wrote some of his music based on inspiration by itinerary musicians. And his next piece, the Caprice Symphony, contains music of all different styles. The Italian style, the French style, the Scottish style, the Polish style, which would be pretty much what gypsy-like musicians would play, and last, but certainly not least, the English style. I leave it up to you to decide which movement has been written in which style. This is the Caprice Symphony.